I'm Norman Gilliland. Welcome to The Midday, and welcome John Harbison.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Pleasure to have you back. It seems to be sort of an annual occurrence that we have now, that we get to see you.
Or even more than annual.
Well, that's fine. Welcome back. And you're here for a particularly august occasion, which takes place this Saturday night. That's April 21st, 8 o'clock, at Mills Concert Hall, and we'll stress Mills, contrary to anything else you may have heard. Mills is where it will be happening, and that is a performance by the Pro Arte Quartet as they continue to celebrate their 100th anniversary. They will be performing the first public performance of the String Quartet No. 5 that John Harbison wrote on commission from them. Also on the program, Haydn's Opus 54, one of his string quartets, and the Quartet in D by César Franck. They first came up with this idea, the Pro Arte Quartet, back in 2005. That's quite a lead time, isn't it, even for a string quartet?
Well, they've been in existence 100 years.
So what's another 5, 6, 7 years to wait? You said at one point that in response, I think, to their commission, that you thought about every 10 years was about right for you to write a string quartet.
Yeah, it seems that's been pretty much my pattern.
The first four were spread out pretty much that way.
Yeah, and the first one, my number zero, would also fall about in the right sequence.
Is there any particular reason you like that kind of spacing? Is just because I know you really like variety and you like to compose in all kinds of different forms. Is that the main reason?
Yeah, I think I probably like a chance to be far enough away from what the last one was, since I do want to make it different and I want to be able to forget some things about it. So I think that probably is helpful.
And you wrote your String Quartet No. 4. Was that also a commission, or was that?
Yes, it was commissioned. It was for the Orion Quartet and a number of producing organizations, among them Santa Fe Chamber Festival, and also Lincoln Center. And I knew all those players for many, many years before, but had not written for them as a group. And it was nice to be able to write for people I knew, always is.
And before we get to Orion, we're actually going to hear that string quartet. We'll go through it movement by movement with your glosses on each movement, which will be quite a treat. Before we hear that, I was intrigued to discover that your awareness of or relationship with the Pro Arte Quartet goes back to when you were about 8 years old.
Yeah, I heard the Pro Arte in the concert series in Princeton, New Jersey, where I grew up. And it was the addition with Kolisch and Raye and Prevost, I think Friedlander, I'm not sure. And I went to all those concerts when I was very young. And of course, when you're a young kid, of course, I was very interested in the music they played, but you notice other things that maybe adults would find more secondary. I found it very important that Kolisch was a left-handed violinist.
Why?
Well, I was studying the violin, and I'd never seen anyone not playing it the normal way. Since Rosemary Harbison actually studied with Kolisch, and I got to know him, got to know her teacher, Raye, I got a different perspective on really all of that, even what it meant to his violin to be a left-handed violin, since violins are all made right-handed.
Sure.
Acoustically. There's an additional fascination to the rarity of that. But at the time, I was excited, I guess, by the playing of that group.
What did they play?
Schubert is what I remember. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I was just discovering the simplest issues about music, but I was very, very excited by the performance. I remember coming home and trying over some of the music that I could remember. But also just finding, you know, when you're a young kid, you go to a lot of things. You don't remember them all in the same way. I think in that instance, because I was playing a string instrument, because quartet music was something I was introduced to early, that I had a very keen appreciation for who they were and what they were doing.
The priority, I think was probably fairly unusual in making string quartet performance a concert experience on a large scale.
Well, there were other touring quartets I remember from the time. I remember that I went to the Budapest Quartet, who were there and around. My teacher, soon thereafter, had been a quartet player. He'd been in the Roth Quartet. And he did a lot of his teaching or recommended a lot of quartet playing. So it wasn't too long after that, really maybe 5 years or so after I switched over to viola and studied a lot of Haydn quartets by playing them. So it was always a medium that I was tracking kind of very, very consistently interested.
You were a 5-year-old pianist, though, and you still play the piano, classical and jazz. Were you encouraged to diversify in your ability to play various instruments?
Well, I think I wanted to play the string, and asked to very early. I was told that one waited. In those days, you said you have to get your hands to a certain size. I played a 3/4 violin, my piano playing was always geared toward improvising. One of the first things I wanted to do on the piano was make up pieces. And to this day, I'd say that's more what I feel comfortable about on a piano. But the string I asked to study, and I remember my first teacher, I remember the smell of her perfume. And she was a really old school teacher. She kept me on the open strings for about 6 months.
Wow.
And extremely strict, a lot of concentration on the bow, and very tough, but in a rather conceivably, sensible way that, I was learning. I remember the first time I pushed my finger on the string and played not only the open E, but an F. A half step. I thought that was just a fantastic
whole new world.
And I actually had a bunch of an exercise book where some, poor person but ingenious had written a bunch of exercises that you could play a piano part to a violinist who only had two notes.
Oh, sure.
And I remember performing that piece, which consisted of only E and F, with my father playing the harmonies and being completely thrilled.
Well, look what Paganini could do with one string. It can be.
Yeah, I mean, two notes is a real restriction for a composer. I guess it was probably a pre-minimalist kind of piece. But I remember it very vividly. I think probably one of the things I've always wanted to do is try to get some kind of musical experience filed down to so few details and feeling very fresh. But I guess in some ways that's much more possible if you're only 6 years old.
Do you still play violin and viola as well?
I play the viola, and I would say that playing from notes is more comfortable for me on a viola than the piano. But I also feel a lot of kinship with string players, and it's a sound that I wanted to hear when I was very young, and I still want to hear it.
And comes in obviously handy when you're writing string quartets.
It does. There's lots of schools of thought about whether composers benefit from being players. I envy the piano writing of some of my colleagues who don't play any piano because they measure things on the instrument in a completely illogical way, which sometimes yields for good results.
Hmm.
And sometimes I think being a string player, I have too high a level of kindness.
That's not what I've heard about the latest string quartet.
No, and I guess it's seldom what I hear coming back. But I don't bring to it the attitude of Brahms, say, who when he wrote his concerto was so much not a string player that he had a violin colleague,
right,
literally right on top of his score. How to make this more friendly to the instrument.
How to make it possible.
Indeed, possible in some cases, yeah. Yeah.
This string quartet number 4 that you wrote for the Orion string quartet, it's in a, unlike your your latest one, which is in, I guess you'd call it 10 short continuous movements. This is a more conventional four movements.
Yes, it is. And that's certainly part of the basic conception that each movement has a very different premise. And a rather simple one, actually, I think, in each case.
You begin slowly, which is a little unusual from a traditional standpoint, with a lento movement.
And it's a solo. It's a piece really for cello with the other three instruments in commentary form, and a couple of very short interludes for the other instruments, which are quite thoughtful and dark. I wanted to start from one voice and then see if I could develop another protagonist later on. So that's really the dramatic, the scenario of the piece, is to start with the single instrument and discover who else and how else they can participate.
Here's the first movement of it then, and we will be, as I said earlier, going through movement by movement, this fourth string quartet, which John Harbison wrote 2001.
I think that's right, yeah.
And this is the quartet for whom it was written, the Orion String Quartet. Have the first movement, Lento, from the String Quartet number 4 of John Harbison, as written for and played by the Orion String Quartet. And more with John Harbison and that string quartet, and in about 9 minutes or so, the quiz question, all of that, as we continue with the midday here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Back with composer John Harbison and his string quartet number 4. Well, you had not heard that for a while. What did you think? What were your reactions?
At Tanglewood last summer, my colleague Michael Gandolfi made an interesting remark which rang a bell with me in this one of his presentations. He was getting so he liked listening to his own music a lot. And for a long time, you know, I felt like I didn't listen to my pieces too much because I needed to kind of push ahead.
Yeah.
But I really enjoy listening to my own pieces now.
That's good.
And I actually think it's unhealthy for even young composers to say they never listen to them. Because if you don't want to hear them yourself, who does? So I guess that's a long-winded answer to your question, but I think it is a sign of good balance if a composer wants to hear their own pieces. I once had a composer visit my class at Tanglewood who was so moved by his own piece that he dissolved in tears and was unable to speak and give a presentation on his music. That was an extreme case, but I managed to fill the air by saying to my students at the time, well, you see, hopefully, when you get 20 years from a piece, you will be at least on the verge of bursting into tears when you demonstrate your piece.
Well, the closest analogy I can come to offhand would be Charles Dickens, who got very emotional about reading from his books.
He also checked through his books to make sure he wasn't repeating himself, which I always felt a very important thing.
Is that something you do, given that
want
to avoid that?
Yeah.
Really, you go through, did you go through the scores of your previous string quartets?
Well, I go through the ones that might touch most narrowly. I mean, when he wrote Great Expectations, he had to go through David Copperfield very close because it was the same basic line of approach. And I've done that for sure to make sure I'm not treading too close.
What about the second movement of this fourth quartet of yours?
The second movement is one I really enjoyed working on because it takes... It's a scherzo in general type, and it introduces another protagonist. We said before that be some other instrument that would be a candidate, and it's actually the principal violin. And that principal violin sort of sharing of material is part of what we hear here, that they exchange. But what they're exchanging is a kind of display in musical time of problem that I remember from geometry class that was unable to solve when I was in geometry class, which the thing about two trains leave at different times mm-hmm. and go at different speeds.
Right. What time will they...
Right. When do they arrive where, and how long does it take one to catch up? Those kinds of things. That's entirely what this movement is about. A theme will be presented, and the other train, essentially, the theme is always presented as one voice, and then a kind of thickened voice answers it, which is really the same tune. Sometimes they leave late and catch up. Sometimes they cross because there are different speeds. And the way that I arranged the different speeds was in a rather fancy way so that they're not going to intersect rhythmically very conventionally, but you will, I hope, hear the same tune moving at different speeds and in different relationship to itself. So it's scherzo in the sense that scherzo was originally a joke or a playful thing, and I think this is sort of a playful idea.
So this is the second of those four movements of the fourth string quartet of John Harbison. And again, we're hearing from the Orion String Quartet. I think Haydn would have liked that movement. That's the kind of scherzo he liked, a good-humored one that keeps the audience on their toes. That was the second movement of the fourth string quartet by John Harbison, whose brand new fifth string quartet is going to be played by the Priority Quartet, who commissioned it, at a concert at Mills Concert Hall. That's Saturday night, 8 o'clock, and there will be pre-concert conversation between composer John Harbison and Tully Potter at 7 o'clock, and that is a free concert and a world premiere of that string quartet number 5 of John Harbison. The third movement of your string quartet, what is that? Okay, we've had this beginning, which starts with the cello solo and then brings in the rest of the quartet in a kind of a dialogue, and then the second movement you compared to the two train problem, these approaching figures. What happens in the third movement?
Well, having established now that the first violin and the cello are at this point in dialogue, I wanted to write a kind of a song movement in which they would eventually play together. First they're soloists again, but then eventually they play together, and the other instruments, at a certain point far into this movement, drop out, and the cello and the first violin play a kind of cadenza, which leads to kind of, I really think it's the central moment in the quartet, where a coda to this movement, a quite extended one, is played, and it is the most, perhaps, ruminative and perhaps even the most lyrically intricate place in the quartet. And it sets the stage for the last movement, which is a kind of a contrapuntal fiesta. Up till this point, after two movements, I think we're waiting to see how the quartet turns into a quartet that has been so segmented mm-hmm. and so divided and so solistically deployed. And this is the transition towards that. And you'll hear the movement first beginning with a rather abstract, extremely clearly etched phrase, which is going to come back many, many times and will be the kind of ground. I like the idea of a ground against which figures are seen.
That sounds like somebody who knows his Bach.
Well, yeah, that's fundamental to that music of that era. So the ground in this case is three voices, but it's nevertheless a ground.
Third of the four movements of the string quartet number 4 of John Harbison. Of John Harbison's string quartet number 4, and two violins, viola and cello. I was just wondering, is that your designation, or is that for this particular recording? Because that is the traditional instrumentation for a string quartet.
I've never heard it needed to be
standard. Yeah, I was a little surprised when I saw that. And as you hear that movement now, after some interval, any thoughts come to mind as to, well, I wish I had done this differently, or I wish they had played this differently, or reactions in general?
I wish I could make an interesting answer, but the answer is no.
That's perfectly all right. And the effect that you wanted is kind of an interesting, I'll call it a problem in the positive sense, because it seems to me that a string quartet, like most compositions, has a certain kind of dramatic arc to it. And you mentioned this as being the movement that has sort of the geographical center of this string quartet.
Yeah, and the finale of this piece is more like a Haydn finale, where everybody gets to play. And they play fast, they play vigorously, and Dan Phillips, the quartet, the leader in this performance, the two brothers alternate actually in this quartet playing first. He said after the few performances, he said, the thing we like about this piece is it's a good play.
I hear that of performers.
Which I like to hear. It means that exercise them well, you know.
Sure.
Not every piece that I do exercises them in the same way. But the emotional center of the piece is over by the time we get to the finale.
You think that's pretty typical of a string quartet? I mean, even if you
not
go
always,
back to Haydn, for example?
In Haydn, it often is, though. Haydn's finales are so complete and so invigorating that there can be something quite moving about his sense of having fulfilled the material. Remember going to a performance of the Clock Symphony in Berlin the morning. Maybe I'd just been up too long, but I got to this thing, and they played the end of the Clock Symphony, which is this completely ebullient, crazily animated piece, and I was just overwhelmed with the emotional power of a composer having given the impression, at least, of so thoroughly realized the potential of that animated, exuberant material. So that's another, I guess that's a little weird, because in general, finale of this kind, the kind we're gonna hear, is meant to provide the kind of closure of getting your lungs full and running your laps.
We'll be back with that final movement in just a moment here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Back with John Harbison, who has written his 5th string quartet on a commission from the Proarte Quartet as they celebrate their 100th anniversary. And the Proarte Quartet is a quartet in residence that the University of Wisconsin has been for some 70 years now. And as they celebrate this year, they've commissioned works by 4 composers, and we've heard from all of them now, with Mr. Harbison joining me today. The performance, the world debut of this string quartet number 5 of his, will take place in Mills Concert Hall, University of Wisconsin campus. That's 8 o'clock Saturday night, And on the program with it, Haydn's Opus 54 and the String Quartet in D by César Franck. In this this final movement of your String Quartet number 4 that we're hearing, you mentioned it as being kind of traditionally the thing that would give you closure. You get to whatever it is, clear your palate, run your laps, whatever metaphor you'd like to use for that. How are you accomplishing that with this final movement of this String Quartet?
The actual means is very close canons, canons being rounds, and the canons are used in a kind of an unusual way. They're so close that they're not always perceptible as follower and leader. They just drive the harmony and create a kind of intensity of activity, I think. And it is kind of the working norm all the way through this piece. One of the things I thought about when I wrote the fifth quartet is that I didn't have to write this kind of piece to end the fifth quartet. The listener doesn't really care because they're just showing up to hear that piece. But for me, it's pretty important that however the next quartet ends, it wants to end, in my sense, differently. That shows, I think, that we're different in our sensibility nowadays, or some of us are, than in Haydn's day, because Haydn was content to write another great animated finale.
Sure, Well, that's true. Yeah, that would be true.
That's already changed, though, even by Brahms' time. And composers were beginning to be restless with the idea that you could be carried by simply inventing within your format. They began to be intent on finding some other way, some other vessel for the thought. So I've tried to, at least in the case of my quartets, conclude each one very differently.
So this is the finale, vivo, of the String Quartet number 4 of John Harbison, and performing the Orion String Quartet. Heard the entire String Quartet number 4 of John Harbison, with the composer providing us commentary for each movement. That was the Orion String Quartet that commissioned that fourth string quartet of his. And as we get to thinking about the debut of the brand new fifth string quartet of yours, I'm wondering, when you have all kinds of commissions for many years now, more than you probably can keep up with, do the performers, such as a string quartet, such as the Pro Arte, ever say, well, we'd like this characteristic, or give us something really meaty, or give us something that's hard to play, or do they give you any kind of wish list?
Yes, there have been a lot of instances of that, various kinds. Sometimes it's quite a helpful element, and sometimes the limitations are interesting. There's been occasions where I found the limitations to be too much. The piece I wrote for 100 tubas, where I had to also include the Maryland State Song.
100 tubas.
And have it suitable for performance outdoors on this nation's capital. I think those were three restrictions too many.
yeah, I would say so. But
sometimes it focuses the thought very well. I think maybe with my oboe concerto, I discussed too many specifics with the commissioner, that sometimes when they hear that piece, I feel like it touches so many of the bases that we decided we wanted to include in an oboe concerto, that it loses some of its independent profile. But often it's just fun to be able to have certain kinds of specifics. But sometimes it's just enough to know the players and how they sound. that's ideal for me. That and maybe nothing else is a lot.
And this string quartet for the Pro Arte, did they make any requests?
Not really, but I've heard them a lot. And I think that counts for quite a bit when you sit down, you know kind of what the sound of the quartet is. And every once in a while, I think it's very interesting to have almost nothing in front of you except, get through from one end to the other.
Blank, a blank page.
Yeah. Not even to know anything about who it's for. That's so different for me and so startling and so much not like the 18th century composers who almost always knew.
Yeah, who they were writing it for and what that person wanted.
Yeah.
Well, John Harbison, thanks for stopping by again today. We'll look forward to your next visit maybe in August when Token Creek is getting ready to
come
around again.
Yeah.
And that string quartet number 5 of his, by the way, will be performed a second time at the Chazen Sunday afternoon at 12:30 and will be broadcast, of course, live here on Wisconsin Public Radio.